Hello, hello, hello. My name is Lisa, and welcome to By the Lyric. This is the show where we look at songs' lyrics and try to understand their meaning. So today we are looking at Hudson by Vampire Weekend. So just starting off with a little bit of background about the song. Hudson is drawn from a poem Ezra Koenig, who is the frontman of Vampire Weekend, once wrote about Henry Hudson. The Hudson River looms large over New Jersey and Westchester County, New York, as the path into the city's riches. Three out of the four members of the band grew up in these places: Ezra Koenig in northern New Jersey, Chris Thompson, the drummer, in South Jersey, Chris Bayo in Westchester. It seems to be influenced strongly by The Waters of Babylon, which is a short story. By the Waters of Babylon is actually a post-apocalyptic story by American writer Stephen Vincent Benet, first published on July 31st of 1937 in the Saturday Evening Post as The Place of the Gods. It was republished in 1943 in the Pocketbook of Science Fiction and was adapted into a one-act play by Brainerd Duffield in 1971. So just a little bit about the story, so you guys kind of understand why people would think that this story and the song are related. The story is set in a future following the destruction of industrial civilization. The story is narrated by a young man who is the son of a priest. The priests of John's people, the Hill people, are inquisitive people associated with the divine. They are the only ones who can handle metal collected from the homes, called the dead places, of long-dead people whom they believe to be gods. The plot follows John's self-assigned mission to get to the place of the gods. His father allows him to go on a spiritual journey, not realizing John is going to the forbidden place. John journeys through the forest for 8 days and crosses the river Hudson. Once John gets to the place of the gods, he feels the energy and magic there. He sees a statue of a quote-unquote god, in point of fact a human, that says Ashing, George Washington, on its base. He also sees a building marked Utreus, sub-treasury. After being chased by dogs and climbing the stairs of a large building, John sees a dead god. Upon viewing the visage, he has an epiphany that the gods were humans whose power overwhelmed their good judgment. After John returns to his tribe, he tells his father of the place New York. His father warns him against recounting his experiences to others in the tribe, for sometimes too much truth is a bad thing, that it must be told little by little. The story ends with John stating his conviction that once he becomes the head priest, we must build again. So Benet wrote the story in response to the April 25th, 1937 bombing of Guernica, in which fascist military forces destroyed the majority of the Basque town of Guernica during the Spanish Civil War. This story took place before the public knowledge of nuclear weapons, but Benet's description of the Great Burning is similar to later descriptions of the effects of the atomic bombings at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. His deadly mist and fire falling from the sky seem eerily prescient of descriptions of the aftermath of nuclear blasts. However, the deadly mist may also be referenced to chemical weapons in World War I, particularly mustard gas, a feared weapon of war that Benet's generation was very familiar with. Again, the story was written in 1937, which was 2 years before the Manhattan Project started, and 8 years before there was widespread public knowledge of the project. Later, Ezra Koenig, the frontman of Vampire Weekend, clarified on Twitter that he has not yet read the story, at least of April 1st, 2014. Someone tweeted him asking, "Ever read the short story By the Waters of Babylon? Lots of seeming references in Hudson." And then he replied, "Nope, but I want to check it out now." And since we never really talk about Chris Thompson, it's important to note that he played a huge part in the making of this song. Ezra Koenig said his own preferred vision of the record would be a Horace Andy meets Radiohead minor key driven dark dance hall album. But this is not quite that. It is dark. Think of this song as the inverse to the well-known A-Punk, like a dirge about growing uptown to make a deal with the devil. You could see it as a song about New York gentrification and ethnic assimilation, or a song about singing a record deal and being depressed about it, or a song about being portrayed Betrayed by an Ex-Lover, or a character sketch about Henry Hudson in the modern world. So here is a quick clip of Ezra Koenig actually talking about the album on which Hudson appears.
Is it, in short, is there a certain ambition you had, maybe a dream before actually starting on the record, or some idea that how you would like it to be in a way, a vision?
Well, I think everybody had different visions. I had a vision that I thought it could be this really like dark, epic dancehall album. And I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I did imagine this kind of like, I don't know, something like Horace Andy meets Radiohead or something like that, you know, and I liked that idea of that kind of, you know, like minor key dark, like dance hall with a kind of grandeur. I don't think this album ended up being that at all, but having ideas like that can sometimes just, it's an important part of the process.
Where did the darkness get lost a little bit?
There's still some darkness, which in some ways is the most exciting part, because this album has a lot of new emotional territory, or just some new moods that maybe people would not have guessed we were capable of. Maybe we would not have thought we were capable of on the first record. But it's nice to explore some new territory and still feel like, yeah, but it still sounds like Vampire Weekend.
What mood?
So here is our first listen of Hudson by Vampire Weekend.
Hudson died in Hudson Bay. The water took its victim's name. Now rivers rise toward Riverside to change their names again.
All right, welcome back. So that was our first listen of Hudson by Vampire Weekend. So let's dive right into the lyrics. The first verse goes, Hudson died in Hudson Bay. The water took its victim's name. The river's rise told Riverside to change their names again. So Henry Hudson was an English sea explorer and navigator during the early 17th century, best known for his explorations of present-day Canada and parts of the northeastern United States. I mean, who's going to forget our boy Henry from grade school? I think he's one of the first people that we learn about in history class. In 1607 and 1608, Hudson made two attempts on behalf of English merchants to find a rumored northeast passage to Cathay, or China, via a route above the Arctic Circle. In 1609, he landed in North America and explored the region around the modern New York metropolitan area, looking for a northwest passage to Asia on behalf of the Dutch East India Company. He sailed up the Hudson River, which was later named after him, and thereby laid the foundation for Dutch colonization of the region. Hudson discovered the Hudson Strait and the immense Hudson Bay on his final expedition while still searching for the Northwest Passage. In 1611, after wintering on the shores of James Bay, Hudson wanted to press on to the west, but most of his crew mutinied. The mutineers cast Hudson, his son, and seven others adrift. The Hudsons and their companions were never seen again. Besides being the namesake of numerous geographical features, Hudson is also the namesake of the Hudson's Bay Company that explored and traded in the vast Hudson Bay watershed in the following centuries. We all know that Hudson's Bay Company actually started off as Hudson's Bay Trading Post, where Indians would trade furs and pelts with settlers for guns and other European inventions. Relationship to the Motherland is one of Vampire Weekend's album's themes. From the previous track on the album, one verse goes, "Oh, the motherland don't love you, the fatherland don't love you, so why love anything? Oh, good God, the faithless, they don't love you, the zealous hearts don't love you, and that's not going to change. Here, the motherland swallows you whole," or in his case, Henry Hudson's motherland swallowed him whole. In New York, there's Riverside Park, Riverside Drive, and plenty of other things named Riverside in Manhattan, where the song is anchored, that would have to change their name as the Hudson River rises. Riverside Park abuts the Hudson River uptown near Columbia University and the Upper West Side. We're not sure if Ezra's really concerned about global warming or just mildly obsessed with the apocalypse, but of course during Hurricane Sandy, the flooding was mostly in Lower Manhattan. Personally, I think that this line may also be referring to how waters rise when you fill it with things. In this case, you're filling the water with Henry Hudson himself. The second verse goes, A stranger walked in through the door, said all apartments are pre-war. We laughed and asked him for his name. He stayed until the end. There's actually an old joke about how all apartments are pre-war apartments, the implication being that there's always going to be another war. The joke, of course, ignores the fact that pre-war in this case is understood to refer to before World War II, and pre-war apartments is actually a category of real estate used to classify the different states and different times of building in New York City. The fact that they laugh at this reinforces the idea that it's a joke. So the song is imagining a post-apocalyptic New York City. All apartments are pre-war now because World War III isn't the sort of war you have a rebuilding process after. You could also think about the song as about our inability to escape history. Pre-war apartments are a big New York real estate meme, especially on the Upper West Side, as the brick housing stock is thought to be more durable, aside from the asbestos abatement and lead paint and pipes. It is less clear who is at war here, though. What kind of war is World War III? Is it the gentrifiers, immigrant groups, a man and his lover? History estranges us from one another and is maybe what it is saying. This can also be as a statement of impending war. To turn the phrase on its head and say all apartments are pre-war because World War III is approaching and will destroy everything. Welcome back to By the Lyrics. So for those of you that are just joining us, we are looking at Hudson by Vampire Weekend, which is a song written about Henry Hudson. So we're at the third verse now. So the third verse goes, we watched the Germans play the Greeks. We marked the 99-year lease our father signed, which I declined to try and comprehend. This is probably referring to long-standing ethnic tensions going back to the Ottoman Empire, as alluded to in their earlier song, Ottoman, or to German and Greek immigrants living alongside one another uptown. There was a large German-Jewish community in Washington Heights and the Bronx, which produced, among others, Henry Kissinger. It could be references to the massive amounts of philosophers from those countries, which sparked this Monty Python video, which I think you guys will like. It's called Monty Python Football, so it's a football game.
Good afternoon and welcome to a packed Olympic Stadium München for the second leg of this exciting final.
So that's a really funny clip. Basically, it's taking Greek philosophers and German philosophers and is putting them into a football game, and then nothing is happening because everyone's just walking around talking about their ideas until someone screams Eureka and they actually end up scoring a goal with no defense from the other team because they are still walking around talking about their ideas. So again, just to reiterate what the verse says, it says, we watched the Germans play the Greeks. We marked the 99-year lease our father signed, which I declined to try and comprehend. So a genius author was wondering if this was written in the summer of 2012 when Germany actually played Greece in the Euro 2012 International Soccer Tournament. Seems like a perfectly gentrifying thing to have been doing while considering Manhattan real estate options. Then again, Germany has also been deeply involved as a comparatively wealthy Eurozone nation in a series of economic bailouts to Greece, again big in the news in 2012. Germany practically forced all those highly unpopular austerity measures on Greece, from which the country is still suffering badly. Play can also be interpreted as personifying, as in Germany's attempt to play the part as they try to create an empire similar to the ancient Greeks. The multiple accounts of the line shows that a pattern is being described, as the events could take place across multiple decades and generations just as time passes fluidly in the song. So Germans versus Greeks could be referring to any time in history. Now let's talk about 99-year leases. So 99-year leases are arbitrary extended leases by imperialist forces meant to mean forever without exactly saying forever. The 99-year lease can also make reference to the 99-year lease developer Larry Silverstein signed in July of 2001, which allowed him to take control of the Trade Center 6 weeks before the World Trade Center attacks. Soon after the September 11th attacks in 2001, Silverstein declared his intent to rebuild, though he and his insurers became embroiled in a multi-year dispute over whether the attacks had constituted one event or two under the terms of the insurance policy, which provided for a maximum of $3.55 billion coverage per event. A settlement was reached in 2007, with insurers agreeing to pay out $4.55 billion, not as much as Silverstein had thought. Silverstein also ran into multiple disputes with other parties in the rebuilding effort, including with the Port Authority. In an agreement reached in April 2006, Silverstein retained rights to build three office towers, 150 Greenwich Street, 175 Greenwich Street, and 200 Greenwich Street, while One World Trade Center, previously referred to as the Freedom Tower, would be owned by the Port Authority, as would Tower 5 with it, would have the option of leasing to a different private developer and having redesigned as a residential building. Fathers could be historical forefathers here, or Ezra Koenig's actual paternal line, as his more remote relatives went to Columbia, and his father actually grew up in the Bronx and raised him for a time on the Upper West Side. More generally, this is getting at the idea that no one wants to think about if they are faded into their paths, lest it become preoccupying obsession. Personally, I think this verse is trying to comment on the control of poor people. I'm not sure which side the Greeks or the Germans represent, but the 99-year lease seems to be a way for landlords to lock their tenants into contracts for the rest of their lives, essentially taking control of them, which doesn't make sense to Ezra. He struggles with the thought of being in a binding contract for 99 years, or forever, and how his father could have essentially signed his life away in this manner. All right, welcome back to By the Lyrics. So for those of you that are just joining us, we are looking at Vampire Weekend's Hudson, which was written based on a poem about Henry Hudson. So we've gotten to the chorus. And this one I'm going to do line by line, whereas the first is I was doing kind of each verse at a time. So the first line of the chorus goes, over and over again, all these never-ending visions. The never-ending visions of overambitious men who justify any means to meet their visions' ends. Columbus, Cortez, Hitler, Nietzsche, Machiavelli, every leader of the British Empire, every leader of the American Empire, every leader of the Roman Empire, etc. And the most dangerous love of power is the one that comes disguised as idealism. Nuclear proliferation and global warming are nightmare scenarios we all have to contend with. While Koenig is ecstatically optimistic normally, as an intellectual he had no doubt battles with these terrifying visions. In several interviews, he has complained of insomniac episodes during which he will read about eco-social catastrophe on the internet for hours at a time. Many of the Rap Exegesis founders suffer from the same problem, and among ourselves, we refer to a period of never-ending visions like this as a vortex or a zive. The next line is over and over again, like a prize that's changing hands. This song contains writing by Rostam, Ezra, and Chris Thompson. So this line may be a self-aware address to the changing perspectives of a three-way writing partnership, which lends to a song. Ezra has openly stated the Vampire Weekend song Step deals with themes of ownership and possession in music, and he may be continuing this theme here. Taking this perspective, the previous line could also be referring to the band's vision for their music. This part of the song was written long before the other parts of the song, and because it predates their fame to an extent, it can be seen as a young lyricist's outlook on a career in music, which early on seems like a prize difficult to attain. And the next two lines of the chorus are, "The time has come, the clock is such a drag. All you who changed your stripes can wrap me in a flag." This is perhaps referring to the mutiny Henry Hudson faced in Hudson Bay. Changed your stripes, relating to people changing their views, but Ezra's staying loyal to the end, even when he dies, or is killed by those who change their stripes. He still wants to be wrapped in the flag. Wrap me up in the flag might be a reference to the United States patriotism or the burial of U.S. war vets, and the concept of changing stripes in conjunction with time, the clock. perhaps having to do with changing national allegiance because stripes are so closely associated with flags and can also be military achievements. Personally, I think that there are two ways to interpret this. The first is from the perspective of Henry Hudson as an immigrant. He was from England, but he changed his stripes to North American. He is speaking towards the other immigrants who understand the struggle of creating a new home far away from the motherland, and he wants them to wrap him in the flag that they are now united under. The second perspective is similar, however, using a more critical view, something along the lines of, all of you who betrayed your homeland, wrap me in my flag and feel shame for changing who you are and forgetting where you come from, for losing loyalty. Moving on to the next verse. The next verse goes, the legendary wooden gate, the first established real estate, is lost in time like all the crimes that won this pleasant land. The first settlement in America was Jamestown, which was a small pilgrim colony around which they built a wooden wall and gate. As Native Americans did not believe in ownership of land, this is arguably the beginning of real estate in America. Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, the first man who, having fenced in a piece of land, said, this is mine, and found people naive enough to believe him, that man was the true founder of civil society. From how many crimes, wars, and murders, from how many horrors and misfortunes might not anyone have saved mankind by pulling up the stakes or filling up the ditch and crying to his fellows, beware of listening to this impostor. You are undone if you once forget that the fruits of the earth belong to us all, and the earth itself is to nobody. So just a little background on who Jean-Jacques Rousseau was, a little refresher. He was a Genevan philosopher, writer, and composer. Born in Geneva, his political philosophy influenced the progress of the Enlightenment throughout Europe, as well as aspects of the French Revolution and the development of modern political and educational thought. So Ezra is referring here to crimes committed against Native Americans specifically to secure this land. The Indians living in the area where Jamestown was settled must have had mixed feelings about the arrival of the English in 1607. One of their first reactions was a hostility based on their previous experience with Spanish explorers along their coastline. They attacked one of the ships before the English actually landed. Yet, the Indians soon began to offer food and traditional Indian hospitality to newcomers. At first, Powhatan, leader of a confederation of tribes around the Chesapeake Bay, hoped to absorb the newcomers through hospitality and his offerings of food. As the colonists searched for instant wealth, they neglected planting corn and other work necessary to make their colony self-sufficient. Therefore, they grew more and more dependent on the Indians for food. As the colony's fortune deteriorated during the first 2 years, Captain John Smith, familiar name, his leadership saved the colony. Part of this leadership involved exploring the area and establishing trade with local Indians. Unfortunately for the Indians, Smith believed that the English should treat Indians as the Spanish had, to compel them to drudgery, work, and slavery, so English colonists could live like soldiers upon the fruit of their labor. Thus, when his negotiations with Indians for food occasionally failed, Smith took what he wanted by force. By 1609, Powhatan realized that the English intended to stay. Moreover, he was disappointed that the English did not return his hospitality, nor would they marry Indian women, an affront from the native perspective. He knew that the English invade my people, possess my country. Indians thus began attacking settlers, killing their livestock, and burning such crops as they planted. All the while, Powhatan claimed he simply could not control the young men who were committing these acts without his knowledge or permission. Keep in mind, however, that Powhatan's reactions and statements were reported by John Smith, hardly an unbiased observer. In the next decade, the colonists conducted search and destroy raids on Indian settlements. They burned Indian villages and their corn crops, ironic in that the English were often starving. Both sides committed atrocities against the other. Powhatan was finally forced into a truce of sorts. Colonists captured Powhatan's favorite daughter, Pocahontas, who soon married John Rolfe. Their marriage did help relations between Indians and colonists, And with the reorganization of the colony under Sir Edwin Sandys, liberal land policies led to dispersion of English settlements along the James River. Increasing cultivation of tobacco required more land, since tobacco wore out the soil in 3 or 4 years, and clearing forest areas to make land fit for planting. Expanding English settlements meant more encroachment on Indian lands and somewhat greater contact with Indians. It also left settlers more vulnerable to Indian attack. By this time, the Indians fully realized what continued English presence in Virginia meant: more plantations, the felling of more forests, the killing of more game, and some, a greater threat to their way of life. The self-proclaimed humanitarian efforts of people like George Thorpe, who sought to convert Indian children to Christianity through education, also did not help. Finally, the deaths of Powhatan and Pocahontas further hastened hostilities. The Indians, led by Powhatan's brother, Opechancahu, bided their time. Pretending friendship, they were waiting for an opportunity to strike the English and dislodge them from Virginia. In early 1622, they struck. In all, nearly 350 colonists were killed. Jamestown itself was saved only by the warning of an Indian Christian convert. One result was an ever-hardening English attitude towards the Indians. Another was bloody reprisals against local Indians. The "lost in time like all crimes" vignette calls to mind another early settlement story, Roanoke. A supply ship landed at Roanoke to find all the settlers mysteriously disappeared and the name of a nearby Native American tribe carved incompletely on a tree. A chilling early American tale, much like Hudson's. Again, this is a witty reference to Rousseau's Discourse on Inequality, maybe part of Columbia's core curriculum. Koenig connects Newark real estate to the general theme of discontent, human fallenness, futility, and mortality that runs through the album. All right, welcome back. Again, this is by The Lyric. For those of you that are just joining us, and we are looking at Vampire Weekend's Hudson. So just to recap, the song was written based on a poem about Henry Hudson, the explorer. We are now at the next verse after the chorus. Hudson died on Hudson Bay, but I was born on Sutton Place. The rising tide helped me decide to change my name again. So Sutton Place is an Upper East Side enclave near Whale Cornell Medical Center. It abuts the East River, whereas this song is about the Hudson River, all the way across town. As in other Vampire Weekend songs, this inclusion is about crossing over to another older dying social class from the Nouveau Riche or Bohemian Bourgeois Upper West Side. Being born on Sutton Place is like being born on third base and thinking you hit a triple. It is important to remember that Ezra Koenig is the lyricist and singer, but not necessarily the narrator of his songs. Other members of the band contribute lyrics and songwriting, but are usually uncredited. Example, drummer Chris Thompson, who wrote AAA on A-Punk. Whether or not he or any other member of the band was literally born there is irrelevant. That said, Koenig has said his parents lived on the Upper West Side when he was born. The rising tide helped me decide to change my name again. Immigrants moving to New York would often have to change their names to disguise their heritage so that they could avoid discrimination and succeed in American business. Some men tend to linger, and some make haste from Babylon. Perhaps a reference to the book Making Haste from Babylon, which chronicles the pilgrims' exodus to the New World. On May 14, 2013, Koenig told a user on Reddit that he was currently reading this book. This would tie in thematically to the line, "Is lost in time like all crimes that won this pleasant land," a reference to the conquest of natives as well as broader theme of property, ownership, and these concepts as they relate to names. It is also important to note the album's use of Zion and Babylon, two important concepts in Rastafarianism, as well as Judaism and Christianity. Babylon being the material world to be rejected, and Zion being the land which Jah has promised for his chosen people, who Rastafarian identify themselves as. New York City is often fashioned as modern Babylon, so coupling Babylon with a song and an album that is largely structured around New York City links the thematic concerns of the album. Babylon is also a township in Suffolk County, New York. It is a transfer stop to get to Montauk, think Long Island to the Hamptons, and a class stopover, like Koenig's other jokes about moving from New Jersey to Cape Cod or the Upper West Side to the Upper East Side. Some will roam their ruined home rejoicing till the end. If we follow Ezra down the rabbit hole to some sort of vaguely war-torn Manhattan, we imagine the rich continuing to party in their ripped-apart brownstones, bricks dripping down a blasted facade like a broken zipper. Personally, I think that these two lines are referring to how different classes deal with the effects of war. Just to recap, the two lines are, some men tend to linger on, and some men make haste from Babylon. Some will roam their ruined home, rejoicing till the end. Some men linger and some men make haste is the two options for poor people, those more likely to serve in military. They can either linger on the memories from war or make haste and block out experience entirely to continue trying to live. Some will roam their ruined home, rejoicing till the end is about the rich. They most likely would not have had to serve in the military and would turn a blind eye to the ruin that war has caused, especially if they won, rejoicing in their lifestyle until their deaths. All right, welcome back to By the Lyric. We are almost done here. The last thing that we are left to look at from Vampire Weekend's Hudson, which is about Henry Hudson the Explorer, is the kind of bridge or the finale or the conclusion of the song. So the words go, the lines are drawn, the map is such a drag, all you who change your stripes can wrap me in the flag. This could also be read as a general bemoaning of territory or nationhood as issues in human society at large. It is a fitting concluding sentiment to the song's mediation on practices of naming a place, belonging to it, the ugliness of real estate, the grim side of patriotism, and the horror and injustice of territorial war. The lines post-war have been drawn, and redrawing the map is an annoyance. Why couldn't we make do with the native philosophy of land not belonging to anyone? Life would be simpler, and we would likely have avoided many, many, many wars. So those are all of my thoughts on Vampire Weekend's Hudson. Again, it has a lot of references in New York City, which is where the band originated from, about Henry Hudson and his life, and about settlement in America in general, and the owning of land and belonging to a place. When someone asks, who are you? One of the first things you answer is where you're from or what kind of nationality or land you identify with. So just some food for thought. Anyways, my name is Lisa. This is By the Lyric. This is a show where we take lyrics and we look at and try and understand the meaning and the message of the song as a whole. So today again was Vampire Weekend's Hudson. I am on every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. And I really appreciate anyone who is out there listening right now. So here is our last and concluding listen of Hudson by Vampire Weekend.
Hudson died in Hudson Bay. The water took its victim's name. Now rivers rise toward Riverside to change their name.